You're moving to re-refer 2776 to the general register, and our intent is to lay this over once we're done with the testimony. Is that correct?
Yes, that's so. Correct.
Very well.
Mr.
Good.
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bagner. And this will actually continue to part of the conversation we had yesterday with Representative Isaacson's bill, at least on a similar subject, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Both do relate to the Career Pathways and Technical Education Advisory Task Force report and the recommendations included therein. So House File 2776, the concept of career pathways is a unifying direction that has come to us from multiple sources over the past years. It is now clearly recognized and supported that every student will move along one or more career pathways, that career goals are part and parcel of the educational landscape. This has not always been the case. As our committee legal counsel has often said, career and technical education has often been viewed as the poor stepchild of liberal education with the golden goal of a four-year degree. I remember when I was in high school just a few years ago, and I was discouraged from taking a typing class because I was college-bound. Talk about a lack of vision. I have always regretted that I accepted that advice. I'm a hunter and pecker now, so. This shift in concept and awareness is at the heart of much work that our state has been engaged in through the Governor's Workforce Council, Carl Perkins Consortia, DEED, workforce centers, and a broad range of career and technical education initiatives throughout our educational system. You have already heard the report of the Career Pathways and Technical Education Advisory Task Force. The legislation before you in House File 2776, the DE3 amendment, we got to DE3 because of various collaborations really trying to hone in on the language, gives some forward momentum to the work of the task force. Our goal in creating this legislation is to move forward the recommendations of the task force by integrating some of their central concepts into existing statute and by moving forward the work through existing channels or organizations. In this non-budget year, part of our effort was to incur no costs and create no new study groups or task forces. To do a quick walk through the bill, you will see applied and experiential learning integrated throughout, beginning on page 1. This is part of recommendation 4 of the task force report and the basis for the definition on lines 1.18 to 1.21.
So Representative Bagner, I apologize for interrupting. I suspect you're walking through the DE3.
Yes.
So perhaps we should do that.
Yes.
Would you care to move?
All right.
So Representative Bagner moves the DE3 amendment, which puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be for our consideration today. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Your bill is amended before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair,
Thank you for getting
me off on the right track here. So, on page 2, recommendations 4 and 5 are reflected in the elaboration of evidence-based practices under regional centers of excellence. The testing language present on pages 4 to 8 is simply a prelude to the definition of career and college ready on lines 8.34 to 9.3. That definition is derived from the work of the task force. The staff development changes on pages 9 and 10 come from recommendations 6 and 4. The last section of the bill, sections 9, pages 11 and 12, reflect our effort to carry forward a number of recommendations through the engagement of the P20 partnership. In your packets, you have a copy of current statute establishing and describing the P20 partnership. In the context of the purpose of the partnership, to create a seamless system of education, and the focus around recommendations for improving preparation for and transitions to post-secondary education and work, the partnership is a logical and fruitful place to plant these seeds and further these discussions. Some of our testifiers will speak further to this placement. As a quick overview, recommendations 1 through 4 are included on pages 11 and 12, as well as recommendations 6 and 8. The goal here is to create a robust discussion among a wide range of partners, many of whom are already engaged in various aspects of this conversation around career pathways, and identify next steps in both policy and practice. With that, I'd like to begin testimony with a word from our task force chair.
Very well. Good morning and welcome back.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'm Richard Rosevac, a National Board Certified Teacher at Irondale High School and co-chair of the Career Pathways and Technical Education Task Force. I want to begin by thanking Representative Reinhart and her co-authors for carrying forward the spirit and the recommendations so quickly to advance the work that we feel is so important. I do also want to reiterate what she spoke to about the philosophical vision of the task force, and I think that's an important starting point for us to recognize, especially from a K-12 perspective as I come from, that historically we have seen career and technical education as, you know, occasionally lesser than college readiness. I think that historically we've also in K-12 been confronted with the idea of career and college readiness, but not being able to clearly define what it means to be career ready, and as a result conflating the two. The work of the task force and the work of many groups across the state really indicates that being career ready and being college ready are complementary but different. And I think that this bill carries forward the work of helping people understand that it is vital for our young people to be both career and college ready. And with the definitions that we have, it spells out how those things can be accomplished. I think also that there are a number of areas that we do need to do additional work on, and in particular the P20 partnership will allow us to continue to work on how to best implement these ideas and to continue to study them with all the relevant partners. I wanted to speak specifically to the staff development portion because that's something that's near and dear to my heart as a K-12 teacher. I am fortunate enough to have had work experience prior to going into the teaching profession. And so between that and externships that I've been fortunate to participate in, I have a sense of what career readiness looks like. Many of my colleagues in K-12 have not had that kind of time and experience. It's very difficult to advise students about what it takes to be career ready without having a better understanding of what that means yourself. By putting this into legislation, to say that understanding this as part of your staff development is important, it legitimizes those natural leanings that teachers have to want to help their students, okay, to help them be successful in all aspects. And it says that we're not just asking teachers to go out and develop this knowledge on their own, but that as a system we value it, and that if we value it, we're going to help teachers help students do it. So I thank you very much for your consideration. We have quite a few other testifiers today, and they're going to speak to other portions of the bill. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Rosovic, and thank you again for the work of the task force. I was just chatting with my committee administrator. I think we all have a pretty good feel, if you will, for what we mean by career and college ready. But we don't define that in state statute. And so just even that simple step forward is important so that, you know, legislative intent is well understood. And then, of course, then laying out the first steps of how students can arrive there, vitally important. So in many ways, we kind of, Representative Reiner, you know, in typical fashion, I think we kind of have jumped enthusiastically forward with you know, the direction that we want the state to go to in terms of this multiple pathways opportunity for students, but now we have to back up a bit and make sure we're real clear about that. Critically important for students as they make their plans and move forward. So with that, I believe Dr. Hynek, I think you're next. Is that right? Good morning.
That's correct. Thank you, Chair Mariani and fellow members of the committee for the opportunity to testify on House File 2776. My name is Karen Hynek, and I serve as the System Director of P20 and College Readiness for the Minsky System, and I was a member on the Career Pathways and Technical Education Advisory Task Force. Our committee met 8 times over 6 months with a vast stakeholder group with many varied opinions on our charge, but we did come to recommendations, and the recommendations are reflected in House File 2776. and which validates our deliberations and our recommendations and provides a venue for these recommendations to be actualized. From the Minsky system's vantage point, the creation of a statewide definition of college and career readiness is paramount. Being able to say to students, teachers, families, and higher education, what does it mean to be college and career ready? And for all of us to agree on that recommendation is something that we're very supportive of. In addition to that, House File 2776 also reflects strengthening the opportunity of creating additional statutory information on how to go about the comprehensive individual student and career college readiness plan. It also provides additional framework for staff development, recognizing that every student needs the opportunity to be well informed by a multitude of different stakeholders in the community and in the school who are well trained on labor market information. Because we know that the state of Minnesota leads the nation, according to the recent report by Andrew Carnevale and Georgetown University, that says in 2020, 74% of our jobs will require some form of a post-secondary degree, and 85% of new jobs will require some form of a post-secondary degree. What's really important in that statistic is the fact that half of those jobs will require a bachelor's degree or beyond, and the other half will require an occupational certification, diploma, or associate degree. These are real jobs that we need Minnesotans going into and helping families understand that difference. It also allows for the opportunity to recognize that learning takes place both inside and outside of the classroom. It expands opportunities for students in our high schools to get applied and experiential learning experiences where they can be outside of the classroom in work environments and also prove their competencies through different assessment measures. The bill also provides for, and I believe wisely, the recommendation that the P20 committee play a role in their recommendations to the legislature on continuing this work that began over a year ago with Commissioner Casilius, Chancellor Rosenstone, and Commissioner Pogemiller on how do we do a better job as a state of redesigning the alignment between secondary and post-secondary education. The P20 committee is a perfect venue to have these types of conversations with broad stakeholders represented and staff that will help guide the conversation in the legislative report. We're very supportive of the concept of MDE, DEED, and Minsky systems also working together to collaborate on assuring that every Minnesotan, no matter where they're located and which district they go to, has available information through mobile and web-based devices that is able to help students and their families become more familiar with the global economy that we're preparing our students for and what the post-secondary requirements for such an educational pathway and career pathway is. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Heinert. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Adney. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. Speaking on behalf of the bill, principals' input has been valued, and we thank you for the opportunity because most of the processes that come forward, we will set them on the ground and make them happen. The things that were most engaging for us in this bill is the fact that it leads to developing the full potential of every learner in our system from middle school through high school. And targets that might be set as early as 8th or 9th grade tend to move. I'm sure we've all been part of that. And it allows for a deeper understanding and deeper guidance in terms of what kids might be going to. And the goal is to reach their potential. Very excited about the opportunities for experiential learning. There are great things happening around the state of Minnesota right now. This would encourage more partnerships and more sharing. There are things happening in Minnesota that are unique onto the Midwest and onto the nation in terms of developing rigor and on-the-job experience, on-the-job shadowing and training, very different from what we would have experienced a couple decades ago, where kids would leave school for a half a day and maybe do French fries and flip burgers. A whole different environment out there. The concern is, how would we fund that? How would we get that out in front of people? But I think the partnership that has been mentioned here, there is great potential in delivering, and what principals are looking for is delivering outside the normally traditional 8-to-3 type of things. There are openings now after talking with some of our business partners, and especially in outstate Minnesota, where people will do things during the summer and have shadowing opportunities occurring on weekends and at night that will really, again, help students reach their potential across the board. So we really speak in favor of this. It is a marvelous opportunity for us to, rather than make an incremental change in how students can embrace their futures, it represents a fundamental change. And inside the bill is also a chance, and I think it's critical, that we need to educate parents. There are parents are, I think, from 10 or 20 years ago, feel that college is the only answer. Many of us, there was nothing else that was even considered besides a college education. And I think the bill calls for higher levels of communication with families on an ongoing basis to make them aware that that is not the only key to success, that you can live a very meaningful and productive life and be a great citizen without necessarily first pursuing a four-year degree.
Thank you, Mr. Edney. And I would be remiss without acknowledging that one of your products is actually in the room with us.
That's right.
Today, our page. And I suspect that, Simon, you may want to head for the door because I heard maybe there's some after-school discipline that you missed out on. That
I take no blame. I take all the credit for Simon, but no blame.
And Principal Andy, just really quickly, just so part of what I'm hearing from you and from the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals is, so the notion I have, the thought I have is that we have kind of had this dominant, and I don't say you, but I think just in general we have this dominant notion of principals primarily managing that 8 to 3. You know, it's all about managing, you know, that space, you know, and that time. And of course, no one's going to argue that that should not be well managed. That's half the battle, no doubt. But what I'm hearing is sort of an evolution, if you will, about understanding your role within the broader context of opening up opportunities that are relevant with society that call on you to do more to manage, you know, that space, but to be deeply embedded in your local community and looking for ways to align that with the skills and interests and passions and opportunities for your young people. It seems to me that is a big shift societally for us, no?
It'd be a fundamental shift because we go from, in some cases, a management mentality to now a leadership mentality that it's a 24/7 job in general, but I think the commitment for our organization is there. In fact, later this month, we'll release a database that actually allows every principal in the state of Minnesota to look at innovative programs across the state and search them, look at definitions of them, and contact the authors of those. So I think we are, again, at that cusp, at that tipping point, that things could really change here in terms of potential for our learners.
All right. Thank you, Principal Adney. And I suspect there may be some questions. I hope you, more questions, hope you'll hang around. Ms. Wallstein.
Hi, Amy Wallstein. I'm the Director of Education and Workforce Development Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and also a member of the task force. And I want to thank Representative Breinert and the rest of the committee for considering the task force recommendations. What the Chamber of Commerce has been focusing on over the last 2 years is on how students successfully gain skills and knowledge aligned with Minnesota's workforce needs throughout the educational workforce pipeline. And I just want to make two quick points on that. As Karen Hynek mentioned, by 2020, 74% of Minnesota jobs are going to require something beyond high school. Right now, we're barely at 69%, and we're not on track right now to have the skilled workers we're going to need to fill forecasted jobs that require training beyond high school. And in addition to demographic pressure, it's clear to the Chamber of Commerce, through talking with more than 1,000 employers every year, through our one-on-one Grow Minnesota visits, and after conducting 70 workforce assessments in spring 2012 with Minsky Indeed, that Minnesota also faces a sizable skills gap in the labor market. There's high demand for skilled workers, but the skill levels of job applicants and employees are not keeping pace with needs of employers. So one strategy to address both the labor force shortage and remedy the skills gap is to better align K-12 with post-secondary, and I think particularly with career and technical education. And that's where the task force recommendations and Representative Breinert's bill come in. Other testifiers have covered quite a bit of the what's in the bill, but I think what I would focus on is how the Representative Breinert's bill aligns with recommendation 4 from the report relating to experiential learning. The chamber strongly supports increasing efforts to expand experiential learning opportunities because they're important to address the skills gaps in the industry sectors, provide students with the exposure to the world of work that helps develop their critical skills and their work skills, and also helps them identify career pathways that lead to employment. The bill also makes important clarifications to the student career plan. And another great piece of the bill is the recommendation that districts provide teachers with access to information about workforce trends and connections between those workforce trends and post-secondary education. And finally, it charges the P20 Council, which is a council established in statute, and gives it more clarity on its statutory charge, and makes the recommendation and provide it gives it establishes it with recommendations on how to better align K-12 and post-secondary, which I think is an important thing for the P20 Council to be focusing on. So with that, thank you, and answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Wallstein. Thank you to the Chamber for working closely with the task force and with Representative Breinert, Representative Isaacson, Erdahl, and others who have focused on this issue of late. A very quick question, but it's for you, Principal Anthony. So there is the portion of the bill that talks about staff development, and so we're adding a whole new expectation of what that should look like. How difficult is that, in your mind, to do currently?
Difficult's a relative term. I think with the partnerships that are in place, and as we push this off, there will be some good examples of how to do that. Professional development in many large buildings now is research-based and is teacher-led, so that this would have to come from probably a principal and administrator. I suspect that there will be not all open arms about one more thing to train for and one more thing to put on people's plates. That said, we're working with some incredible educators across the state, and if it can be communicated clearly, and I think there are some other underused resources we've talked about in our meetings, that the Department of Ed has done remarkable work that could share information across the board. I think as that comes together, teachers can become better and more insightful about this. But that would have to be principal-led. I don't believe, again, the research in most of our schools, a lot of our staff development is led by teacher organizations. So I think we would probably have to do some heavy lifting to get it off the ground in terms of that.
All right. Mr. Rossman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it. If you don't mind, I'd respond also. I do a lot of, as Principal Adney was referring to, a lot of the staff development these days is led by teachers, and that is one of the areas of responsibility that I have. And in previous testimony, we have talked about the Ramp Up to Readiness program through the College Readiness Consortium at the University of Minnesota. And so that's in 67 schools this year. A lot of the work that we do as part of that is around informing teachers about workforce trends. That's how we came to it at Irondale High School, was through presentations there. I'd also like to highlight the role of counselors in each school, because the school counselors do have specialized expertise in these areas and are resources that, again, working in partnership with administrators and maybe through the Counseling Association, but particularly relying on information coming from DEED and MDE, as we envision reports to be able to come out along those lines, especially out of the P20 partnership. I think that this is really it's something we have to do. I know that it can be difficult, and frankly, as a teacher these days, asking me to do one more thing is one more thing. But this is important work, and if you tell teachers we want you to do something that's important, and we're going to help you get there, they're going to do it. And so I really encourage you to support that particular provision. I know it's difficult, but I think it's very worthwhile.
Well, and again, what I'm hearing is all taking place within the context of a dominant approach where you have teacher-led work. So we're hopefully maximizing the opportunity for ownership, from our teaching corps. All right, so we have several questions, and Ms. Wallstein, please feel free to join us for answering as well. Representative Erdahl and Representative Erickson Sandra. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and testifiers. First, I'm glad that we've reached this point, and I attended many of the meetings as well, and sometimes I would have liked to have seen a little more direction, a little more, well, shall we say, boldness. I understand that it's still come a long way from when I first introduced this concept 4 years ago. Sometimes you take smaller steps to reach your ultimate goal, and I think that this bill does put us on the path to be a lot more successful in helping to form the future. A couple of specific questions, and maybe I know the answers, but I'd like to get them on the record. Do you feel, and Representative Reinert, could answer, will this enable a smoother transition from high school to vocational schools?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I would say that's just a small piece of the vision of not just this bill, but the task force work. And that's, it's not just about the transition from a vision of a K-12 system to a post-secondary system. It's about the integration of the 7-12, at least, and maybe K-12, but the 7-12 component with the early years of post-secondary. So that would involve what typically is called vocational training, but it would involve a whole range of career opportunities for students that begin to be integrated within the K-12 environment very early on, so that, as we discussed last year when we talked about the assessment bill, some students will graduate credentialed. They will already have that post-secondary credit experience before they get their high school diploma, and others here may want to comment on that question.
I would just say that the bill, in my mind, certainly is very proactive in raising awareness of opportunities as early as middle school, which I think that's a really rich time to be able to start talking about careers and options. I think for families and for some staff, that isn't addressed until the junior or senior year. And I think that awareness issue, that it can be broached in curriculum, broached with teachers' training, I think will pay great dividends.
Representative
Erdahl. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Reinert. I thank you for your answer. I understand the various levels. I was trying to directly focus on one particular thing, and I think that you have answered that. But also, your comments follow into my next question. Yes, raising awareness is important, and I think one of the things we talked about was that a robust counseling or of career direction should be at least by ninth grade. Is that part of this?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl. Actually, I would say the one element that we've held off in investing in fully here is the learning plan or the personal plan that we talk about here that will go with the career pathway vision that will accompany each student. We've made a few nods in that direction to the recommendations of the task force, but that will take some investment, and I think it'll be in a budget year that is undertaken to integrate the vision of what the counseling process is. We do address here the need for a larger number of adults in the educational environment to be well informed on career and task workforce issues, so that they can, as they're advising students both formally and informally, they have that information in mind. But the real integration of that plan work has yet to be done.
Representative.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman, and Representative Reinert. again, you know, kind of dovetailing with this, you know, junior, senior year, obviously that's too late. You know, we have to do something. It isn't necessarily or could be, you know, having more counselors. I can remember in ninth grade in Litchfield Junior High School, it was actually part of our social studies curriculum, where we had a class called orientation, which basically was, you know, a careers class. So there are ways to do this, and I think one way or another we have to focus on some method that is going to get that guidance at an earlier age when it's really needed.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Erdahl, I agree with you, and I really think what you're saying was the seeds for the assessment reform we did last session, and that's to integrate career and college readiness benchmarks throughout the system so that the assessment becomes a tool in the plan guidance. It's one among other perspectives that we can look at with the approaches that were evidenced in tools like the Plan and Explore, which unfortunately are no longer available to us, and that's a different question that wasn't on our table last session, but so that students are being assessed on their aspirations and goals as well as their skills and abilities, and throughout the system we're integrating our advice to students in that context. So I think it's the knowledge base for is important for both counselors and staff brought more broadly.
And just one quick follow-up again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do think it's important, as has been mentioned already, that the parents be involved in this through the system, that it has to be done that way. It won't work.
Very well. Representative Erickson Sandra, and then followed by Representative Black.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I've been around so long that I just hope this doesn't become school to work again, because that, too, evolved into, then we had to go back to knowledge and skills. They were number one, so we do go through these cycles. But I do appreciate the good work of the task force and your recommendations. And a comment that this is a wonderful opportunity for mid-career professionals to enter the teaching field. We have an alternative pathway to licensure, and in the comments I heard from the testifiers, we want our teaching staff to be very knowledgeable in career areas, and so I think that's just a little side comment that could work very well as we need more teachers in our classrooms. But Mr. Rozovic, for you, you have Irondale, and that's an outstanding model that I think works very well with this bill. You already have that program in place. And then in the private sector, we have Cristo Rey, so we have two models there. Do you think that most school districts will look to one or the other as a way to embed these changes now in the school system, especially at the high school level?
Mr. Chairman. I think that if you look in the task force report, the introduction to that does talk about quite a variety of models. And so you've identified two, but I think there are other models in development. So there, I know that with some grant funds last year, there's work underway at Anoka High School. There's work underway at North High School in Minneapolis. I know that some partnerships have been taking root in at Riverland Community College. So I think there are a variety of models that districts will pursue, and part of what Principal Adney was referring to was creating the opportunities for people to share those best practices. So I don't think that there is going to be a prescriptive model. I think that what we get in this particular bill is really legislation that highlights the need for these kinds of conversations to go on and provide space and opportunities for communities to discuss how best to accomplish those goals.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Harris.
Thank you. And that's really good to know that there are so many models out there. How long did it take you, Mr. Rozovic, to implement your concept at Irondale? Did that take more than 2 years?
Mr. Rozovic.
Mr. Chairman. The actual implementation phase was about 2 years, but the underlying work that we'd done, especially through Ramp Up to Readiness, to prepare the staff to engage in the kinds of work that we needed to do, was vital. And We had been doing a certain amount of work in analyzing data over the years to really identify which areas we were most ready to move forward in, and then proceeded with pieces in a pilot fashion. It only came together as early college in the last couple of years, and that was pretty quickly because we'd done our homework up until that point in time. I think that it will be easier to replicate that model because the tools that we have to understand where we are much more sophisticated and robust than they were in the past. So we also have the experience of different models that people can draw on and adopt pieces of as they're going forward. So I don't think it will take as much time for other schools to build their capacity to move to where Irondale has been, although it did take us quite a while to get there.
Sometimes the Pathfinder takes a little bit longer to cut through the jungle. Ms. Walstein, I think, also wanted to comment on your question.
Yep, and just in response to that as well, there's some great things that are going on in greater Minnesota. Rochester is putting together a C-Tech high school that's going to blend technical education, going to be a high school on a college campus, you know, so they're starting to go through the process that Irondale did. And if we look at some other examples of where this has happened, Bridges Academy in Brainerd, that has been and was an early adopter of this blended model, and of making sure that students are aware of career pathways beginning in eighth grade and then building from that throughout their process.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a question for Representative Brainerd, now that you've moved.
Representative
We're going to need longitudinal data to continue and to be robust in this transition to career and college ready. So knowing that right now, when we get the Getting Ready report, we learned that there are several students who go off to college who are needing remediation. So I'm wondering, in the longitudinal data that will be collected, will you be able to take a look at the definition now that you have provided for college and career ready and point to performance and the district and the responsibility they have for making sure students actually are college ready and will not need that remediation? Because I believe your definition says they won't need remediation. So how are you going to, are you going to track that through the longitudinal data system? And to what accountability will we hold our districts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson. That's a great question, and I think it fits the entire dialogue we've been having for a while around this issue, because the remediation data has been the most stubborn data element in our whole approach to graduating our students, to moving them forward to meaningful post-secondary education. The dime just hasn't moved on remediation. So that's been a problem. Yes, that data will need to be tracked, and if we wanted to call the department down to talk about the longitudinal data system, we could certainly do that. But that's my assumption, that we'll figure out how to have that data. But the data elements will be more sophisticated and complex than they have been before, because students will be being credentialed before graduation. So it's not necessarily about being college ready, but career and college ready, and credit, post-secondary credit bearing courses we're talking about. That work may be done for many students in high school, and many of them may indeed go directly into employment, depending on how robust those partnerships are. So yes, some measures of career and college readiness will be critical, but I think that's part of the discussion with the Minsky system, and I think Dr. Hynek could probably comment on that in a more sophisticated way than I can. Would you like to?
Mr. Chair, before you leave, Representative Briner, one more question. Does developmental is developmental a part of your definition also of career and college ready, not just the remedial piece but developmental, so that we can be addressing a larger audience of students?
Yeah, Representative Brainerd.
Okay. I'm going to ask you for a little clarification on your question, Representative Erickson.
Well, I foresee, Mr. Chair, thank you. I foresee that we're going to have, you know, students who maybe have special needs, who have a longing to have experiential learning, but who may not be at that point yet for some of what would be offered in the high school, for example. And so will that be a part of your flow when we think of the definition of career and college ready?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the clarification, Representative Erickson. Absolutely, that's part. If you look in a little more, and I'm sure you've reviewed the task force report, but you'll see there is great sensitivity to that range of need, and that part of what we're doing is to try and to create a whole range of flexibilities and the kinds of interventions and tools that we use so that students' needs, the variation in students' needs, can be met at a number of places in the educational continuum. So definitely that experiential learning is intended to be embedded throughout the system, actually K-12, so that there are a range of learning opportunities for students that best address their abilities and learning styles. Did you want
Thank you. Ms. Heideck, and hopefully briefly.
I'll be brief. Thank you. A few pieces that I just wanted to make sure the committee was aware of. In talking about models of college and career readiness, the committee should be aware that MNSCU and MDE made a significant partnership move this year in hosting 6 regional Pathways to Post-Secondary Summits, in which we brought together close to 700 educators from secondary and post-secondary together to learn about the new legislation that happened last year, to talk about alignment of assessment, to look at best practice models like Irondale and Bridges Academy and the work that's happening in Rochester, so that each community could learn about different best practices that are happening statewide and nationally, and to think about what makes sense in their local communities, and for the Department of Ed as well as MNSCU to provide some technical assistance as people are building models. As far as the work on developmental education, the MNSCU system is actually working with MDE. We've been selected as one of 10 states with Complete College America to attend their boot camp that will be happening in April, in which we'll be bringing together both our academic standards person from MDE as well as ABE and MNSCU faculty together to think about the alignment, what those targeted interventions can look like that happen in high school, the earlier data that we can collect in letting students know if they're not on track to meeting those benchmarks that we talked about last year. And this will provide that opportunity for the vast majority of that to happen in high schools and or ABE. But as you mentioned, Representative Erickson, we know that there is a difference between college ready and program ready. There are many technical programs across our campuses that may not require college level reading and college level math or college algebra. And making sure that we align student assessments with their aspirations is key to this work.
Very interesting. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Representative Erickson, for those questions. Representative Bly and then Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Chair. I applaud the work of Representative Brainerd, and it's good to see moving in this direction. As you know, in my experience working with other kinds of programs and other kinds of students, I'm always thinking of the exception to the rule. And I just want to make sure that as we move forward, and I see this as a move to be more inclusive of and pay more attention to individual needs of students and their strengths and all of that. But I whenever I hear the word kind of pipeline and moving things more, you know, through the college career pathway, I'm cautious about excluding different learners and even from this group, and want to make sure that, you know, as an example, the phrase "think different," you know, probably not grammatically correct, but comes from someone, Steve Jobs, who dropped out of college. And when he was in college, he audited classes on calligraphy, totally unrelated to, but he was interested in them. And I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of students and programs that pay attention to student interest and student-driven education. I recently read a book by Lynn Stoddard called Education for Human Greatness, which really looks at project-oriented kinds of education and allowing students to pursue their interests. And although, you know, it's great to have higher-level planning about how we institute things, I think it's also important to look at the ground level as well. And I hope, you know, from my own experience as an alternative educator, a lot of the best solutions we made working with the community had to do with individual businesses or business people who we invited into our classrooms. And so I want to not just plan at the very highest level, but plan at these lower levels and encourage teachers to work together in this way. But not to lose sight, you know, I think of, for instance, the program for students with the high school for recording arts, which is, I think, doing heroic work with students, and yet they are constantly criticized for their test scores. And if we overemphasize those kinds of measurements and overemphasize content, really, we lose the opportunity for those students who need that option to find the career that they're destined for, to allow them to follow their heart to the place they should be. So it's a kind of a diatribe here, but I want to get your response to make sure that we're looking at, you know, how do we encourage and how do we leave space for that kind of advancement and career pathway as well.
And hopefully it'll be a brief response.
Well, sorry, Mr. Chair. This is probably like a dissertation discussion or something that Representative Bly and I have engaged in for quite a long time. And I would just say that every movement needs a gadfly, and so he's my gadfly. There's no question that what we're trying to do is broaden the scope of what the personal journey of every learner is, and every learner's interests and passions are meant to be integrated with their skills and abilities, so that test scores and interest aren't enemies. They ought to be friends. They ought to partner to help us guide students appropriately so we understand. If they want to run a recording studio, that may be just the place we're trying to get them to. So, and I'll end it there, and Representative Bly and I will continue this later.
It's a great conversation.
Could you repeat that? I missed it.
Yeah. Mr. Bly, it sounds like you're going to buy Representative Rudolph a cup of coffee. A very quick question for you, I think, Representative Reinert, and perhaps others can weigh in. So, we've had a little bit of tension about the reports that are required for remediation so that we understand what the rates of occurrences, incidents of remediation are in our state. How important is it for us to have that data? You're smiling. it's not a trick question, though. I mean, we may have that question before us. So how important is it to have the remediation reports as part of being able to follow this framework with fidelity and be fully informed by it?
Mr. Chair, members, it's critical, but we also have to recognize that the data frame will be shifting from the direction we've analyzed this data before. The tools that we're using to measure what remediation is required are in the process of being changed. Is the acuplacer or the measure? When do we actually initiate this kind of testing? We're going to initiate it much earlier in the process. So, but the dialogue around remediation is central. And whatever data is there, we want to look at it, and we want to be able to have a conversation around it.
It sounds like we shouldn't be taking steps until we know what the alternative or the next phase of what that reporting would look like. Ms. Wallstein, if you're anxious to get in on this.
Mr. Chair, just to add to that, I think that you might be referring to the Getting Prepared report. We are very concerned that the Getting Prepared report has not been published, again, since 2011, so we're looking forward to seeing that, which Office of Higher Ed has is indicated is going to be available at the end of the month or beginning of next month. So that'll give us a richer sense of what remediation is going on right now. And I would just add that I think we also need to have our eye on completion data as well.
Indeed. Representative Yaruso and then Representative Solotsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaking as a mid-career professional that went into teaching, one of my functions in, I taught high school science, chemistry, physics, physical science, and I was an engineer. So I frequently talked to students about their career goals and gave what my department head might have thought was sometimes subversive advice to a couple of them. We've talked about the need to involve everybody in this process, including the parents and the teachers and the counselors and the professional development. And in the recommendations from the task force, they talk about students having access to information. And I'm really happy to find the paragraph on page 11 that says provide students regular and frequent access, blah, 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 and community is in there. I think one of the problems with trying to advise students about something with the breadth and the complexity that all of the possible adult careers is that a lot of people involved in the process don't know what they don't know. And so it's extremely important to make sure we don't lose this little paragraph in this whole thing and find ways not only to send kids out to experience something they've already found an interest in, but to bring the other people in that know about the developing careers out there, because we regardless of how much professional development we do, there's no way we can keep every teacher and every counselor up to date on all of that. So I'm just I would like to hear any thoughts you have about how this would happen, and just make sure that we, like I said, don't lose that four and a little bit line paragraph in there.
Representative Yaruso, I saw very strong noddings of affirmation from folks at the table, so maybe just a quick response to her observation.
Chair, yeah. During our discussions, this data is being collected, and it's just a question of how is it being shared. I mean, our job markets are emerging opportunities for students and for parents, for college and for career readiness. That data is collected. It's on a website and can be shared. And it should be shared, so it's common data across the state of Minnesota. One of our very early discussions talked about the great job, I believe the Department of Ed was doing this in job tendencies and trends. And it was amazing to see the research and know that it could be in parents' hands on a website. And that's updated on a yearly basis, I'm sure. So the good news is some of that heavy lifting is done. It's an awareness issue. Are you aware that you could go to a website and look at average salary and certification needed for certain jobs? Some of that has been completed.
And it sounds like it's awareness within a framework of guidance. Representative Yaruso wants to follow up. We'll have Representative Swatsky, and then we're going to move on. And Representative Breiner, you will get the last word before we do that. Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've sat with students as they looked at some of that data that's out there. And first of all, I've found it's relatively easy to get answers to questions these days. It's you know, the world, completely different world than when I was a kid. You can get the answer to almost any question. The tricky part is the questions, knowing what questions to ask. And then just on a technical note, on those websites that talk about average salaries, it's not, they're really, I get a little frustrated with them because there needs to be a whole lot more emphasis on starting salary than average salaries, because unless you deeply know the statistics of that particular industry, you have no idea what average means. But I'm not talking about websites. I'm talking about getting kids talking to actual humans that are in different industries, and we need to find ways to do that. Thanks.
Representative Salak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. And this is the start of reform of education that I'm excited about, to know that we're involving all kids of all interests and abilities. I need, for the record, to say that I know that you're working on more adults in this environment, but I don't want it office I know you'll be respectful in knowing where to put those adults, but those guidance counselors need that support hands-on with the kids. And to Representative Erdahl's, back in the day when we were teaching together in New London Spicer, you know, a couple, and I modified everything he told me. Right? No. But I agree, Representative Erickson, that I don't want this to be school to work and just flipping burgers. But there is some value in that, too, because you're learning how to work the till, counting back change, or, you know, all those things are important. So we can't put a value on everything that we've learned in the past, we can learn more from. It's exciting, but I want the right adults in the right places with the kids and not behind a door that don't ever involve with the kids and not just an add-on to students. My shop teacher will be thrilled to know because he has very, very many talented students in his shop classes, but he's having a hard time motivating them to do that fourth year math that is unrelated to what they're doing it's unrelated to what they're doing in the classroom, but they're learning in the classroom how to do that math. And I think that all of these things that we need to this bill represents and brings. One other outstate school that I want to mention is Alexandria is doing a great relationship with their technical, and I'm looking forward to hoping that with Ridgewater College we can have the same in the Wilmer area. So thank you.
Representative Sawatsky, to paraphrase Churchill, and the only reason I know this is because I watch House of Cards. To change is to improve, to change often is to perfect. Representative Breiner, last thoughts. We're going to lay this over. We'll come back to the bill and continue the conversation.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate the rich discussion at the table. And I would just say if you have further issues or questions of the like that have been raised here, if you have the time to read the task force report thoroughly, almost every issue that's been mentioned is engaged in the task force report in a very active manner. It's not a linear process to shift a system to this larger vision. And so we're moving incrementally, but there's that kind of circling around the issues. And I thank you for your participation, and I assume that we'll continue this dialogue in a broad and open manner, both within the legislature, within our communities, within our schools. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Rossovic, for your leadership, and Principal Adney for on the ground work and providing a perspective to us from the front lines, if you will. And Dr. Hynek, as usual, thank you for your good work, and Ms. Wallstein as well. Representative Breiner, the chair will lay House File 2776 over, and we'll be the intent here is that we'll be folding this bill into a small omnibus bill next week. So, as amended, by the way. Representative Dabney.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your consideration of my testifier's time today. I'd like to move that House File 2514 be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance.
Very well. The motion is before, or rather, the bill is before us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, each year almost 4,000 students in Hennepin County either fail to graduate on time in a four-year time frame or drop out of school. Each student who fails to graduate with their peers has a different story and a different set of, let's call them hurdles before them or barriers. House File 2541 supports the emerging work of Intermediate School 287 in its establishment of a dual enrollment middle college program with Hennepin Technical College. Current law presents some barriers to these at-risk but motivated students, and recognizing and accommodating this limited number of students' needs can have a powerful impact on their personal ability to close their own personal achievement gap. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce my testifier, Superintendent Lewandowski, known well to the committee, and ask her to proceed.
Good to see you again, Superintendent. Welcome.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, my name is Sandy Lewandowski, and I'm the superintendent of Intermediate District 287. And as an intermediate district, we've had a long history of working to advance the educational needs of students who are at risk, high risk, of not graduating from high school via our Area Learning Center programs. And in addition, as you just heard, we are part of a regional initiative with all the superintendents in Hennepin County and the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners to collaborate across the region in identifying and solving system barriers that impede those 4,000 students from getting a high school diploma. Growing knowledge of these barriers is the impetus for the bill in front of you today and the learnings we achieved when we started a program this fall called Gateway to College. There are a number of Gateway to College programs across the country, but we were the first in Minnesota to be fortunate enough to be awarded a grant to start such a program, which essentially allows us to establish an Area Learning Center program on the campus of Hennepin Technical College. And this program has allowed students who are at great risk of not graduating to attend such an early middle college type of program with the goal of not only achieving a high school diploma, but also moving into college classes and getting a post-secondary degree. It really promotes the concept that students in the achievement gap can achieve or succeed when they have a choice to enroll in alternative programs that are tailored to their educational needs. And we've been able to see firsthand this year the transformation of these kids when they move into a college environment. In our work, this kind of program tailored to have a an Area Learning Center program on a college campus is at the heart of the achievement gap. It's a program that provides social and educational supports to not only gain that high school diploma, but to evoke the incentive to get into college classes. In other words, this supports a well-known PSEO type of option available to advanced learners and makes it available to those struggling for a high school diploma. What we've learned are there are two major barriers to giving struggling students this option, and they were alluded to in your last testimony. First, transportation remains a barrier for students to attend this kind of program on Hennepin Technical College. We enroll students from all over the metropolitan area in Brooklyn Park. But we also know that many students are unable to attend this program because it costs money for their families or public transportation to get them there. And while we are seeing highly motivated students coming and wanting to enroll, sometimes they just cannot afford to take the public transportation to get there. A second barrier is that some students attending this program, like many adults who come back after they're an adult, are in need of targeted instructional interventions, such as those you just talked about, interventions in math, for example, to successfully take the ACCUPLACER and move into the college-level classes. Access to these developmental classes is currently not possible under the current PSEO language. Ironically, we do know that special education students with an IEP can take such developmental classes. But if you're not special ed but struggling, you're not able to take that. This is an inconsistency that's a barrier that we can change. In summary, this bill allows two barriers to be dismantled. First, it allows students who qualify under free and reduced lunch criteria and are enrolled full-time in an early middle level program to be eligible for the parent reimbursement of transportation costs if they choose to attend an ALC program like this. This is similar for parents of current PSEL students who can apply for a transportation reimbursement to take their children to a college campus for a PSEO class. Secondly, it allows for the same group to access the developmental classes that target instructional strategies needed for them to be able to pass college classes. If you pass this forward, this language promotes a pathway for students who are at risk of not graduating to access a program that's tailored to their needs. Such barrier-busting types of language seems to me to be at the heart of our achievement gap efforts, and I would urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill? Please come forward, Ms. Heine.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and fellow members of the committee. On behalf of Minsky, I would also like to give our support to this bill. As mentioned earlier, we've been working with a lot of our districts across the state in the need for developmental education and targeted interventions through early college programming. The way in which the language is written is something we would be very supportive of. We do have examples of this type of program, as mentioned by Superintendent Lewinsky. We also know that there are programs that have happened in Minneapolis known as Jumpstart to College, as well as the PACE program that happened out of Century College that demonstrated this type of initiative early, where districts were having to create contracts to allow their students the opportunity to take college developmental courses on the campuses. I actually happen to have done my dissertation research on Gateway to College and can speak firsthand to how this program is working across Massachusetts, where they've made it a state policy piece. It is the difference for students who tend to be at risk to physically be on a college campus and to experience the college environment. And for many of them, as first-generation students, that's where the light bulb changes. They get an opportunity to see students who look like them from their neighborhoods experiencing higher education. It's an opportunity to collaborate on developmental education between a high school district and a college and really create the types of targeted interventions that are needed to not have developmental happen after the student graduates. So on behalf of Minsky, I would be very supportive of this particular bill. And thank you, Representative Dabney, for bringing it forward.
Thank you, ma'am.
So maybe you can just stay there for a second, if that's okay. I'm wrestling with, I like the concept of the bill. You've explained it well in terms of what its intent is. I'm just wrestling with the language a little bit in terms of how it's written. And I want to make sure that the language doesn't open up other possibilities other than what we just spoke about. In other words, you know, there is an existing law, you know, an expectation that PSCO not become the remedial, remediation intervention for secondary. Our belief is that, you know, our secondary systems, you know, should be doing that, right? And so maybe if you can just expound a little bit by looking at the language on lines 2.8 to 2.10, whether or not that language in your mind is tight enough so that this doesn't just open up the door for any, any access to remediation consistent with what has been legislative intent till now. And part, I think, of what's happening as well is that we're going to be moving forward, right, in the state in terms of, you know, the a secondary experience that opens up post-secondary credits and experiential learning opportunities, et cetera. And so I'm projecting in my mind down a little bit that, you know, maybe eventually this means pretty much any student in any high school. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm being extreme here, but I want to be very careful in terms of how we construct the language.
I think that's very good feedback. I think the reality is the language, I believe, was intentional to be prescriptive to students who are enrolled in a middle college or early college program. And to date, we have very few that are prescriptive that fit that definition of a middle college or early college program. That's where a student has the opportunity through a partnership that's prescriptive in some fashion to earn up to an associate degree. So that's where it's not opening it up to every student to be taking developmental coursework through PSEO, but instead through an aligned partnership like the Irondale model or the Gateway to College model, and how to leverage that opportunity for students to take, in essence, the developmental English class for high school credit, but maybe on a college campus.
Mm-hmm. Represent that.
Mr. Chair, I'm wary of problem solving on our feet here, and I don't think we're quite going to get there. But Ms. Larson, if I may, Mr. Chair. Ms. Larson, do we have a definition in statute of middle or early college programs?
Ms. Larson.
I'm not sure that we do. What I was looking at was 123A05, which are the state-approved alternative program organization. And the first subdivision talks about allowing a district to establish an ALC, an alternative learning program, or contract alternative in accordance with, and it's the graduation incentives program. So I wonder if one way to think about this is to say students eligible to participate under 124D68, so except when a student under section 124D68 is enrolled, for example. I think that would clarify it if, in fact, that's the intent.
Mr. Chair, I can be clear, as Superintendent Lewandowski has been. That is the intent. And particularly if the bill moves forward, if we need to reference other existing statute, come up with a definition of middle college program that, you know, would put a box around this intent, I think we're comfortable with that. The piece I want to drive home with the committee, though, is my belief and experience that to get these motivated but at-risk students across that goal line of high school graduation and then hopefully moving on really does get down to individual. It's hand-to-hand combat at that point. It's working with each individual student, assessing their needs and assessing what it is that Carlos needs that's different than what Kathy needs to bring her across the line. And these middle college programs for these students, such as Intermediate District 287 is set up, can be very motivating to those kids. And we'd like to remove the barriers and move them on towards success.
I think it's important that we're obviously, you know, establishing our intent here. If the bill moves forward, I would counsel not necessarily defining middle or early college, only because that's continuing to evolve here. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. we may be, I guess I would encourage us to adopt a step-by-step approach along the lines of Superintendent Lewandowski's testimony here, which would follow, I think, once the one suggestion that Ms. Larson laid mm-hmm. out here. Mm-hmm. Okay, very well. We do have a question, a couple questions that maybe this is engendered. Call for Representative Isaacson and Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Representative Danny, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I taught in the PACE program at Century College for a couple of years, and I can tell you that the impact that's being had in those classrooms, talking with students that I know, just in my conversations with them, never had that kind of a focus put on them before. It really was such an illuminating experience for them, and it really informed my teaching a lot because it gave me a lot of wider breadth of experience with students, and I can't stress enough how I think this is important that we do this, get it right, and make sure we provide that opportunity, because the PACE program, if I remember right, shut down because of lack of funding, and part of that funding problem was the transportation issue that's around this. And so, and I know they're looking for alternative models, but I think that what was crucial about the PACE program that I think is different from doing it in the schools was the students all got on the bus, came here, had a packed lunch, and we had class at the university or at the college, and that I think changes your perception as a high school student who never really saw this as an option mm-hmm. to now see themselves in that frame for some of them, and I mean quite literally for the very first time in their life. I mean, they literally had never saw themselves as that before, and so having that opportunity to see themselves in that frame was essential, and I just can't speak enough about how we need to really seriously consider this, because it speaks to a much larger issue that I'm passionate about, and this idea that when we get them engaged in these kind of things, they're not engaged in other stuff that tends to get them in trouble. And the population that I was teaching through Inverhills and Century was exactly that population, that if we didn't focus on this way, they would find a focus elsewhere that might have been trouble. And so, to be frank, and so I really can't stress that enough in my experience in teaching those folks how I think it was just a beneficial program for them. I think it was just a beneficial program for them. And so I hope we get this through and do it the right way.
Representative Isaacson is speaking mostly about the first part of the bill,
yeah.
But obviously how it relates to the second.
Yes.
And the thought I had about that in particular, and this is something that the next committee will probably more properly, address because it involves a finance issue. But one of the thoughts I had about that is equity, geographic equity, mm-hmm. So we have greater Minnesota where, 25 miles is, just a walk down the block, compared to St. Paul, and so I worry about, you know, that access issues that way as well. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, to what extent is our new definition of college and career going to have an effect on your language? Because aren't we at every step going to have to remember, if this becomes law, Representative Brainerd's definition, that career and college-ready definition is going to be a factor here?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it will be a factor here. How the two intersect is unclear to me, but I've got someone here who can help.
and I'm
grateful for that.
Just your luck, Representative.
Yes, exactly. Call a friend.
Dr. Heine.
Thank you. I think the reality is the opportunity this opens up is that the student will become college and career ready through the opportunity to be on a college campus while they're still in high school, receiving developmental education through a partnership with a district and a college or university. So it's providing a type of targeted intervention to happen in high school to align with Representative Reinhart's definition of college and career ready, allowing the student to graduate college and career ready. It's just another mechanism to allow for targeted interventions to take place.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for that answer. That does help me understand it better. But what kind of costs will be incurred? Because now colleges who have students who may be dually enrolled are going to have to put emphasis on development or remediation. Won't there be additional costs on the college side if they're taking up that responsibility?
Mr. Chair and representatives, I believe that the impact right now is that opening up access to the developmental classes is something that certainly could allow more students to take them, although again this is a very narrow band of definition, and it speaks back to the earlier discussion. So I do not have a specific figure on this, but I would suggest the costs of not doing it are extraordinarily high, in that what we see is kids dropping out to the numbers that we are, and I think this is one small way we can impact that cost in the future.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Maybe our saving grace is the fact that there's going to be a diagnostic now in the new testing regime. The diagnostic will occur if the results at 8th and 10th grade show that the child is not attaining proficiency or at the level of the assessment. So maybe that's the saving grace that we won't have, even in this, if we keep middle and early college program language in there, in the future, whenever that new testing is implemented, that would probably be the saving grace, as I will call it.
Representative Erickson, I agree 100% with you that when we implement the new aligned assessment in 2015, it will provide much better diagnostic information for students, their families, secondary teachers, and post-secondary teachers. I think what this allows for is what we've seen in the early pilot projects of PACE and Jumpstart and Gateway to College, that for some students, the targeted intervention being on a college campus has light years of wonderful effects for that student and their family, because it's the first time they have the opportunity to actually be on a college campus. Not that every student would benefit from this, but some might, and it might provide an opportunity for students and their families to create more of a seamless pathway. If they take the developmental course while they're in high school, they meet the objectives of that course like any other student on a college campus. They then segue without testing into college-level classes.
Representative Eisenstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have to say, furthermore, lest my previous comments are not framed correctly, on the remedial side of things, when you're talking about the narrow band that you're referring to, it seems to me that when we look at the possibility of the remediation, or not remediation, but the remedial work at that time, it does save the student down the road money as well. So the cost savings is hard to quantify because there are so many little aspects that get saved. So if that student's not paying for college credit that's remedial in community college, which I see at Century College all the time, students having to take 90 and 80 level classes mm-hmm. because they didn't qualify, if they're able to manage that in that narrow band specifically, to manage that in high school, there's a cost savings to the student as well, which I know is a major focus of the past legislature. And I think that remedial work is going to be necessary because, frankly, I think about the students that I had in my classes who were not college-focused, so to speak, before they had been selected to engage in this program. And many of them were struggling with some basic things, and I think that we need to be sure to be sensitive to that. At the same time, the number... My entire class that I taught went to college after they graduated. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that the statistics showed like 1 in 5 and 1 in 10 were going before that. And so I really think that it's good to know the cost of what it's going to be, but the benefits are just so far outweighing that we just have to be mindful of it. Thank you.
Representative Dabney, the chair's a little bit uncomfortable with the language as it is, but mm-hmm. The intent is clear to me, mm-hmm. and I think it's just a matter of just some technical work here. Council has suggested one possible approach in terms of identifying these students under the graduation incentives program, because we have language there. You and I both serve on finance, as does Representative Erickson, of course, the chair. I'm wondering if I don't hear, you know, any kind of great concern about the intent here, and the only concern I think you're hearing is from the chair about making sure, you know, there's some really strong parameters here. So I'm wondering if we move this bill together, you and I can you and I would work in the next committee to be able to make a technical change. I also don't want to jump to make one because I need to think this through a little bit more as well, but I'm just kind of being straight up with you that I think we can draw some tighter boundaries around the language on page 2 here. So if you're amenable for us working together in the next committee, I would encourage us to move this bill forward. We're kind of victims of time here, and I don't want to bring it back here just because we have so much other work to do in a very short period of time.
Mr. Chair, that's the legislative process. I'd look forward to working with you.
Very well. Good. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify in the bill? If not, then Representative Dabney renews his motion that House File 2514 be re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, and thank you, Dr. Hynek and Superintendent. Representative Sawatsky, you've got someone you wish to introduce, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to recognize my peers and colleagues from the West Central Minnesota, and so they're here today for Lobby Day, lobbying their favorite or not so favorite legislators. And no, I'm just teasing, but please welcome folks, pretty much all those people over there.
I'm wondering very quickly, so what communities are we talking about?
Wilmer?
Litchfield? Here we go. Well, welcome. It's good to have you here today. Thank you for being with us. Members, we do have one other bill. I was hoping to get the final bill in, but... Okay, yeah. So the powerful committee is coming in 10 minutes here. So what time are we coming back? So members, we're going to recess until 6 p.m. in this room.